got a crazy ass true story to tell. It could be funny or thrilling or creepy as hell. And when you speak, surely none will make a sound. And the world's going breathless when your true story comes.
All right, welcome back to Your Best True Story Podcast. FCAT, you're back in the house. You excited?
I am. Been waiting all week to get this episode in.
Nice. You were saying that you were recovering from a little bit of a cold, though?
Yeah, my voice might be a little bit off. Just got one of those flu things happening, so we'll get through it.
Yeah, well, as anyone knows that listens to this, we have no standards, so we should be fine.
That's good.
And just to start off, we've got four call-ins this week to go through, and before we get to that, I did want to announce the winner from last month is the guy Rob Kidston, who called in the Great White story.
Yeah, that guy's interesting. He's the one that dives deep in the oceans all over the world and takes photographs and videos.
Yep. I'm actually excited that he won because he does seem like he just came out with that book, so it seems like he'll probably have, you know, some more interesting stories if we can get him to come on the show. I actually haven't notified him yet. I'm gonna email him that he's won the 250 with this episode and ask him to come on the show, so hopefully have like an interview show with him sometime this month coming up if he can schedule it.
I love it. The deep oceans are, you know, one of the most underexplored areas of our planet. So
did we talk about, did you or have you ever scuba dived?
Well, okay, let me do air quotes. I did scuba dive in a pool with my friend's equipment. So okay. I sat at the bottom of the pool for about 10 minutes and got to experience that, but never in the ocean. Never.
Yeah. I've gone a couple of times because I've actually been licensed, even though I never really have used it that much, more than a couple of times. But, and I can't remember, I don't think I brought this up the last time, it's pretty damn freaky when you get down to any level where you lose sight with the surface. And I've only been in the situation one, but literally I've only scuba dived like three times in my life. But one time we went down far enough where you could no longer see the surface. You could also not see the bottom. And it was the freakiest thing because you lost perspective of up, down. It was like being in outer space. Everything just was endless blue. And there was really no bearing that you had on any direction, left, right, up, down, and it was a really unnerving kind of freaky experience.
I guess the only thing you could use for a point of reference would be maybe if you can make an air bubble happen and see which direction it goes.
Yep.
But yeah, besides that, you're just out there spinning around, floating. That's crazy.
Yeah, and that wasn't even that far down there, I think, because you've got a You've got to have some kind of special certification to use different, like, oxygen mixture and gases to go down really far at all. But I want to say we were only, like, 30, 45 feet down or something like that. Maybe not even that far, but it was just weird. Like, once you lose that perspective of the surface, and if you can't see the ground yet, it's like you're in friggin' outer space only with monsters, but
plus, you can't really move that far. You can, you think you might be swimming, but you're really just a sitting duck at one spot.
Yep, exactly. So hopefully we'll get Rob on the show and get more of his perspective, since it sounds like he's got a ton of diving experience in some pretty interesting locations, and especially like deep water stuff. I think he mentioned that like he was certified for the deep water stuff.
The creatures get more and more interesting the deeper you go.
Yep. So the first place I got certified was getting my license down in the Keys, and we actually went for our final dive. You go through all the scuba instruction over a few days. And then for the final dive was actually a shipwreck off the coast of the Keys somewhere. We had it was pretty cool. And but I was really young when I did it. I want to say like elementary or junior high. So obviously with my dad and my brothers and stuff. But the thing that I mainly remember from it And I still remember the dive instructor's name was Boomer. And he took us down there and he said, "Now, don't get scared. I've got a friend that's a moray eel down that lives in the shipwreck." And we're all thinking like, oh, yeah, this is, you know, he's
those
pulling
things
her,
are
like,
hideous looking.
Hideous, huge. And it was like a freaking sea dragon came out of the ship and it literally wrapped. It was bright yellow and it had like huge fangs that it liked to show off. It would open its mouth and show them. And it wrapped itself all around this guy, Boomer, as we're underwater in our scuba gear down at the shipwreck. And just completely like a snake wrapped around. It was probably, I want to say like 8 feet long or something, wrapped around him. And I remember, and he was trying to get me to come over and like pet it. And I was just like, fuck, no, Boomer. I will never forget that image, though. Those things look, yeah, I'm sure they're very friendly animals, obviously, but it looked like a monster.
They're terrifying in the aquarium, so I can't imagine what it would be like in the water with them.
Yeah. So now getting on to the first phone call, this is going to be kind of a weird phone call that I'm going to get your take, Freddie, on what you think it might be, what might be going on with it, and because I really don't have an answer. But the first phone call is going to be from a girl named Kyla, who lives in upstate New York, and I just called this phone call Bird Massacre.
Ooh, all right, let's go.
Guys, my name's Kyla. I love your show. I'm getting into listening to all the episodes and thought I would call in my own story. I live in the upper New York State area around Saratoga Springs. And if you've never been around this area, in the autumn, it's absolutely beautiful. Like it would be pictured on a postcard or something. Because all of the trees, there's tons of woods and forest, and all of those trees turn beautiful shades of red and orange and gold, and you can see the rolling mountains in the distance, and it's just absolutely breathtaking. And it's easy to get out of the city into nature very quickly. And my story takes place last fall, right as all the leaves had changed, and there was a lake not too far from where I live that I used to like to drive to and sit out on my yoga mat and meditate, because out at this lake there was like a big grassy area leading up to the lake, the beautiful golden and red trees in the distance, and then even farther back, the you could see the mountains far off on the horizon. And I used to go there because hardly anyone else was ever there, and it was absolutely so beautiful and peaceful. And so what happened one day that was truly bizarre and strange, and I still don't understand what the explanation for it would be, is that there was a big cloud of birds, of starling, which you can pull up what I'm talking about. It's called a starling murmuration, I believe, which is when you see a huge crowd of starlings all moving in the sky together, kind of in unison. So it looks like a big living black cloud, or maybe an amoeba even swirling and diving, and it's mesmerizing almost because it's so beautiful but kind of surreal that all of the birds move in sync so much to appear from a little bit of a distance like a living single giant organism. And some of these murmurations, as they call them, have up to 100,000 starlings in them, I believe. I don't think that this one that I saw that afternoon had that many. It was right as dusk was coming, And so all the light was starting to fade, and then out of the woods, all of these starlings rose up into the sky, and it was at least several thousand of them. And they started beautifully swirling over the lake, going up and down, like chasing insects or whatever they're doing. And I was breathing deeply and just watching them, kind of thinking it was beautiful and amazing that they were there sharing the meditative moment with me, when off in the distance towards those rolling mountains you can see on the horizon, I heard a boom, sort of like a single clap of thunder. But it was strange in the fact that it was just the one deep resonant boom from far out on the horizon. So it wasn't natural made, I don't think. But within probably 2 to 3 seconds of hearing the boom, then all of the starlings over the lake, thousands of them, just began dropping from the sky straight down into the lake, dead. They just dropped, plinking, plunking, one after the other. All of them crashed into the lake and were dead. So not a single starling was left in the sky. And it freaked me out so much that I grabbed my yoga mat, grabbed my bag, and just immediately ran back to my car and got in my car and sped home. And I was shaking because it seemed so surreal and strange. And I expected, I watched the news all that night, I kept on looking online, but there never was a news story about the boom, the noise, or the birds dying. And birds dying, I sort of understand, because so few people go to that location that maybe no one would know that that had happened except for me. But it seems like the boom was so loud that somebody else would have heard it and reported it. And the strangest part was, I barely slept that night thinking about how bizarre it was and trying to rack my brain for what an explanation would be, that the next morning I drove back out to that spot to look around more sort of calmly and look at the birds and see if I could put together anything. And when I got there, which was like 9 a.m. the next day, a little bit after, there were no birds, no dead birds left in the lake. It looked completely normal. Out of thousands of dead birds that had fallen out of the sky, there wasn't a single one there. And that's it. I still don't have an explanation, and that's my story. My name's Kyla from Upper New York State. Thank you.
So what do you think, FCAT?
This is a classic military-industrial complex test of a frequency weapon.
Really?
Yeah, for sure.
Huh. All right.
That's what
I said.
That's
a good answer. Well, that was a better...
Before we get into that, let's talk about these groups of flying birds. I can't walk with my toddler in a grocery store without him weaving in between my legs and tripping me up. So I can't even under any circumstance imagine how 100,000 of these birds or fish managed to just seamlessly turn on a dime.
Yeah.
You know, that just amazes me in general first, because, you know, thinking about the first part of her story, and I'm like, yes, that's right. They don't run into each other.
No, it is pretty amazing. Like, I've seen nowhere like that many at one time. Like, I don't think like 100,000 or something, but groups of, I think crows maybe do it also, or maybe not. Maybe it's always, I don't know birds well enough to know which are which, but I've seen that before, like a cloud of birds. And yeah, you're right. It's freaking amazing. They don't run into each other, apparently. They somehow all know what they're doing and where they're going.
They systematically turn when they should turn. Like, it's not even they all turn at the same time. They sort of, like, you're going around a corner. When it's your turn to get to the corner, then you turn.
Yeah.
Then you, like a snake, you know, part of its turning at a different part than the other.
Yeah.
And it's all seamlessly executed, though.
That seems like definitely an argument for me that there's different ways that you can communicate, and animals might have the ability to communicate in ways that we don't understand completely.
Yeah.
Like through, you know, sonar is an example, but something that might not even be sonar, but some other, like, you know, where they're putting out vibrations.
Telepathy.
Or something. Yeah, something that they basically, sort of the same concept maybe as the way that birds often know how to travel, like, huge distances with and go back to the same place, or travel certain pathways, which I think quails do as well.
Yeah.
That they're picking up on some kind of like
magnetic
fields or something like that of the earth.
Yeah.
So maybe they have a special, maybe they can also somehow use that to actually communicate, or not maybe in the way that we think of communication, but they have, like, you know, that magnetic.
Yeah, it's got to be seamless, like back of the brain operation, where you're just operating, you know, in group formation.
Yeah.
Just sort of like links you in. And, you know, imagine we all had self-driving Teslas and they all talked to each other on the road and maneuvered where they need to go.
That's what the communists want for us. To be a seamless, beautiful boss.
Wow. I just watched a video earlier today, and I think it was Japan, and they were just commenting on, hey, look at all of these workers. They all walk to work silently. Nobody runs into each other, and nobody talks. And
they were saying that like it was an awesome thing.
Well, that's what I commented. Yeah. I'm like, wow, what a perfect worker society. Congratulations.
Congratulations. No one has a soul or a will to live.
They're in perfect order.
But they move perfectly.
They move seamlessly, perfectly, silently to their jobs to exchange their life energy for IOUs. It's fantastic.
What, before we get off of the communication thing with animals, have you ever heard of the, for which I don't put a lot of stock in this, but people that believe in, lots of people that believe in Bigfoot think Big Feet can create something called infrasound.
Okay.
Have you ever heard of that? It's like that they can use as...
So it's like a seeing but not echolocation.
Yeah, no, but it's like, because people that claim to have seen Bigfoot, they will lots of times like say they almost are paralyzed.
Oh, okay.
And have a, feel like a freeze kind of effect.
Uh-huh.
And the theory behind it is that the Bigfoot can put out a thing called infrasound that I believe sort of shuts down your
jamming.
Yeah, jamming your nervous system or something, that they might even use to, you know, confuse you to get away. Why they're so hard to...
Well, the defense mechanisms of animals is hilarious.
Yeah.
Some of them, they all, like, they fall over fainting, some of them.
Yeah.
They squeeze out, like, liquid and just kind of shit themselves, some of them. Yeah. Like
octopus, have you ever seen in the camouflage octopus?
Oh, that's, yeah, that's along nuts. With the
yeah,
with ink.
The, yeah.
Along with the ink. But, yeah, the blastic. Camouflaging is nuts. The,
yeah.
The things that they're a whole nother subject.
No, they're probably aliens.
Well, yes. <Yeah. laughs> They're a whole nother, like, not species, because that's not the right word. They're just a whole nother level.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And that would make sense to me that octopuses came from, octopi came from outer space or something, because they seem so different. And
they came from a different origination point than we did,
yeah,
somehow. But getting back to the bird story, then the cleanup is another, I think, would be telltale sign of a military exercise.
So what do you think the boom? Because when I was looking into this, there is actually a tremendous amount of people for probably the past decade that have reported weird noises. And they seem to pop up, like, you'll actually have multiple people in one city say they heard an unexplained boom, humming. Like a mechanical sort of hum is another one.
Well, you got the Havana Syndrome,
yep,
thing where they use frequency weapons on office buildings and stuff.
Yeah,
everybody gets headaches and vomiting and brain fog, and you know, then they do have crowd control weapons at the same time that make you feel like you're on fire, or, you know, all using frequency.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
So what do you think that is? That's a military test?
Sure.
Well, yeah.
I mean, they could have been, I don't think specifically they would be targeting the birds, because that's kind of random to, you know, that's a lot of preparation to have 100,000 birds in a specific area of the sky. But maybe it's an after effect of something else that they were testing that ended up, you know, they're like, we got to clean this mess up.
Yeah.
So.
Have you ever heard of the HARP?
Yeah.
Weather?
Yes,
thing?
Jim, I have heard of HARP.
I assumed you had. I don't know a ton about it, but I figured
classic weather manipulation technology.
Yeah. It's
nothing big. They've been doing it for 50, 60, 70 years.
I think the HARP thing, the theory, some of the noises are attributed to that, I think.
Yeah, it could be. It's just frequencies, and then what we can perceive, you know, might get into the range. We can't perceive anything. We're like little blind animals running around in this existence. We have like a little sliver of what we think we can see and what we think we can hear. And, you know, every once in a while, something happening kind of gets into that zone for a second, and we're like, whoa, what was that? But probably there's a whole bunch more going on than we really know. So,
well, the sound thing, definitely, like, it doesn't seem like anyone ever gets like a firm answer. I did find a website called strangesounds.org that has been chronicling for probably the past decade everything, booms, weird sounds, hums. And one of the weirdest things, which I actually remember when it happened, but I didn't put a lot of stock in it or pay attention to it. But back in 2016, which it could just be a hoax, I don't know. But supposedly a lot of people were claiming they were hearing trumpets playing in the sky.
Cool.
So I guess some people thought the world was coming to the end. Like,
well, there's there are some stories that are describing that you should hear a certain number of them.
That seems like a long lag, though, if that was the start of the end of the days in 2016. Like, we've gone a long ways without the...
Maybe it's not the end of days, you know, because we always think of things in our perspective. Maybe it's not exactly as we perceive things to be. And, you know, maybe... And you get, like, your Nostradamus guy supposedly trying to describe something from our time back in his time, you know... where it's all lost in translation, or it's the best job they can do. So trumpets, maybe, you know, sounds.
Yeah.
Maybe they're trying to tell you something. Maybe the hieroglyphics in the Egyptian formations, you know, where they're showing you spaceships and trumpet things and people wearing iFit bracelets and stuff. Maybe we're all back on course of...
I haven't seen
exactly supposed to be.
There's Egyptian hieroglyphics that show iFit bracelets.
Oh, yeah. They got ones where they show you sort of what was going on with the COVID. Where they're shoving those long, utensils up your nose, like holding your chin, holding the utensil right up your nose. There's a bunch of those carved into the wall. So, you know, it's a...
That's good. You're a wealth of information, Freddie.
Hey, it's not my information. I'm just looking at the pictures of the things carved in the wall from thousands of years ago.
Well, all right. This next call is going to ground things a little bit. And so this isn't anything really paranormal, but I did title this call Canadian Horror, because from a...
Horror?
Horror, yeah.
Horror.
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
Because it is pretty disturbing, just in a very, like, kind of grounded way. I even looked it up online, and I never realized that there are a tremendous amount of Indigenous women that go missing every year in Canada. Like, an abnormal, like, 400% more than normal missing people. And since like 2016, 2017, or maybe it was even earlier, recent than that, 2018, I think there's been something like 2,500 missing Canadian women. That just,
did you account for like the indigenous schools where they dug up all those the kids?
Oh, no, wait, is that recent? Like,
yeah, that was like, I swear that was in the 2020, 2021 range.
Wow.
Where they're like, oh yeah, hey, by the way, here's a bunch of indigenous schools, and they got 400 dead kids buried.
Yeah,
you know,
well, or that's awful.
You know, things missing from them, and so.
Well, I'm gonna definitely put a link to. There's a couple of websites that I found about this that I'll put a link in the show notes to that are just about this phenomenon, because it seems like we're in the United States, so we don't really have a good perspective of what's going on in Canada, but it seems to be a bigger issue than at least anybody knows about here. But yeah, it's pretty troubling. So I'll just preface it with this call with that. And also, this just shows why you shouldn't get too drunk.
Okay.
So here we go. This is Jonesy from Moose Jaw calling in and his Canadian horror story.
My name's Jonesy from Saskatchewan area, Moose Jaw to be specific, and the scariest tale I've got was from a while back that happened when I was still going out drinking pretty heavy with my buddy Drew and the rest of the boys, and we used to hit up a spot called Bugsy's in Moose Jaw. It was only about 20 minutes drive from Drew's house, and Drew's place was where we always met up to pregame for a bit before going out, you know. And this particular night, we pregamed quite a bit before heading out. And so we were all pretty well knackered by that time and piled into Drew's black 150 pickup truck, with me deciding to ride in the truck bed and kind of enjoy the cool night air rather than being squeezed into the little space behind the main seat with Dan's fat ass. And this fact is important because it kind of explains how I got in the pickle of the story. And so at a certain point, I was beyond knackered and had my homing instinct kick in that I had to get out of the pub before I made a total horse's butt out of myself. So I decide to go outside, and I don't remember any of this, but the boys tell me that I told them I was going to catch an Uber to take me back home. And so I don't think I ever tried to call an Uber. It didn't look like, but apparently I was so drunk, I thought it would be better to just pass out and go to sleep. But I had the wherewithal to not want to get left at the pub, so I decided the best course of action was I would just crawl back into truck bed and pass out in that. That way, when the boys came out, they would be able to get in the truck, they'd see me there, and they'd drive me back to Drew's as if I'd been hanging out with them. And so that was my drunken logic, and I remember crawling back over the side of Drew's black 150 F-150 truck bed and immediately drifting off, feeling safe and sound, like I had figured out the problem. But the problem was I had drunkenly actually crawled into the wrong black truck. And so the next thing I know, I'm waking up in the moving truck a while later, going down the interstate, and have no idea how long I've been asleep. It must have at least been over an hour, though, you know, because I could already see signs on the highway that were telling me that we were on the way to Medicine Hat. And Medicine Hat is about 3 hours away from Moose Jaw, but we were, like, probably almost halfway at that point. And that's when my brain starts going, working through the alcohol fuzz, and my heart starts skipping a beat, realizing that I must be in the wrong freaking truck, you know? So, and am able to peek up over the cab window, and I barely peep through before I immediately confirm that that's not Drew and the other boys at all in the cab. And in fact, it appears to be two pretty rough-looking, big old bearded boys that probably don't take too kindly to jokes or random fellas stowing away in the rig. So I drop back down, panicked, and start running through all the different scenarios, like I could knock on the window and admit that I'm back there and ask for their help. But what I decide to do was take the most cautious step, which is a step to not do anything, just with the idea that hopefully they'll be pulling over at some point, hopefully maybe to a gas station, and if that happens, I can jump out and skedaddle. And only Lady Luck was absolutely not shining on me, and instead of me mercifully sneaking away once they stopped, we kept driving for at least a half hour more. It seemed to go on just forever with me hunkered down, my heart beating, getting farther and farther away from Moose Jaw with every passing mile. Eventually, as we passed a little dirt water town I've heard of before called Maple Creek, they ended up taking an exit. And I think that whole area is like a kind of dairy farming or farming type area. And so once they took the exit, they didn't actually go to Maple Creek town, but started driving up some smaller roads, and those smaller roads got smaller and smaller until eventually we're bumping and bouncing over a dirt road in the middle of nowhere, with all I can see is there's no road lights anymore, just a few stars above in the moonlight and occasionally trees passing on either side. And so my brain starts to panic, thinking of every worst case scenario, like what if these fellas turn out to be like serial killers that are gonna rape me and then barbecue me for dinner or something. And so here's where you're probably thinking there's gonna be a good twist to the story and maybe something funny happens, like it turns out I know them, or it's a prank orchestrated by Drew and the boys, or maybe these fellas turn out to be great guys and now are my new best friends and drive me all the way back to Moose Jaw. Well, you'd be 100% wrong on that one, bucko, because although I'm not positive if they could be classified as bona fide serial killers, what happened once the truck stopped was a whole heap of nasty, messed up stuff that it still gives me nightmares sometimes. So the two big old boys stop the truck and get out on either side, and praise be to the Almighty, they don't look back. So luckily, I think they may have been sipping on a bottle of rye as they were making the long drive, so they weren't on the top of their game, so to speak, when they got out of the truck and seemed to both be stumbling and slurring a little bit as they stumbled up towards this dilapidated ranch house that they had parked next to about 50 meters away. And one of the fellas, he turns, because I'm peeping over the side of the truck bed, and I see him turn and start to walk to two big shipping containers, like the kind of containers you'd see on a big freighter being offloaded somewhere. There's two of those things, big metal, steel, completely enclosed shipping in containers. And the one fella starts to walk towards them, and the other fella says, "Hey now, no need to do that. They ain't gonna die overnight." And the one stops, shrugs, turns back towards the house, starts walking. Then they go inside the kind of dilapidated house, and as soon as the screen door bangs shut, then I kind of twist over the edge of the truck bed as Stan is skinny and down in the darkness as I can, and drop over the truck back to the side away from the house, and I'm crouching down. And so I think I start to look around to get my bearings, and I am in the middle of nowhere, up a dirt road with nothing but like probably a half mile of open fields in every direction, with the lights coming on in that crappy house with the light showing that there's a big open, not open, but a big wide window in the living room that looks right out on the direction of the truck and the dirt road leading back to the only direction that I can know that there is potentially any civilization. So basically, it's very worrisome for me to even try to move away from the truck, because there's light coming out from the house, lighting up certain areas, and I can see those two big old fellas stumbling around in the living room, making more drinks. And so as I'm debating what I should do, if I should just try to run for it, or maybe if I should wait until they fall asleep and try and sneak in and steal the truck keys. But of course, then I'm potentially turning what was just like a accident on everybody's part into me actually stealing a truck. So that didn't seem like a good idea. And then as I'm debating all of this and waiting for these two guys to hopefully pass out and not be looking out the living room window, then I hear what sounds like a girl crying very softly, coming across the wind a little bit. And I realize it's coming from those shipping containers that are about 50 meters away from the house. And once I start to listen more closely, it sounds like there's maybe a couple or a few girls or women sobbing and crying. And so I suck up my courage and I decide I've got to find out what's going on first before I make any decisions. And so I crawl almost on my belly across the yard and towards the shipping containers, trying as much as I can to stay out of the living room light coming through the big window in front. And as I get to the shipping containers, then I realize there are many girls softly crying in the shipping containers and talking to each other, like in comforting tones. I can't see them, but there are air slits in the containers towards the top. But since each container is like 12 feet tall, there's no way that I can get up to look in, but I can hear them in there moving around. And I couldn't tell exactly what they were saying, but I think they were whispering and speaking like in a First Nations dialect, maybe. And so as I'm kind of, realizing the awful situation, that what those fellows were talking about before was that they've got women locked up in these containers. And as I look around the containers a little bit, I can see that they are padlocked and there's no way to open them from the outside or inside. And as I'm doing this, then as I go around one side of the first container, I'm crouched down and I stumble over something and almost fall on my face. And so that was the point that it almost became overwhelming to me and I sort of panicked. And looking back on it, I wish I had been more heroic and calmer and known what to do to actually make sure those women were okay. But I didn't. And before you judge me, please just realize you weren't in the situation, and it was who knows what you would have done either, but basically I panicked and I just started to run back in the direction up the dirt road. And I guess because I had to run right through the light that was shining out of the living room window, I guess something the Almighty was watching over me to some degree, because they didn't come out after me. Apparently, they just didn't happen to be looking out that way as I ran up the dirt road. And I ran faster than I ever ran in high school track. I ran faster and farther and quicker than I ever had before. And it seemed within a couple of minutes, I had gone from the dirt road to another road that was paved. And then I saw what looked to be town lights in the far distance. So I cut through woods in case they did decide to follow me, and then came on another road. So I wasn't even sure where I was going, but my heart was beating out of my chest, and I was just running to get as far away from there as I could. And luckily, about that time, an older couple in a sedan came by, and I guess I was waving at them, but something in my panicked look, they decided I was more pitiful than dangerous, I guess. So they let me in, believe it or not, and I told them what was happening, and they actually drove me all the way to the Medicine Hat police station, which was the biggest, closest town that would have police station that I could report this to. And I did, and I told them everything at the police station and went into details. Unfortunately, I couldn't, because I didn't know the area. I didn't know how to tell them to get back to where I was, because I didn't really know where I was, and I ran up and down so many roads and through the woods that I really couldn't give them good directions. But they told me that they would look into it. They acted like they were taking it very seriously, and I hoped and prayed that they would go save those women and arrest those guys, and I left it with them and got a ride back all the way to Moose Jaw and expected to hear something on the news or from the police station about it at some point. A call never came from them, and so eventually, several days later, I call the Medicine Hat police station to ask for an update on it to see if they had found them. Unfortunately, they just said they couldn't find the record of the report that I made. And I couldn't remember the officer's name that had taken the report because I was so panicked and in shock as I was talking to them. And so that was basically it. I've got no way to follow up on it. I don't know if those women were saved, if those men were arrested, it's all still going on. And it was terrifying experience, and it kind of made me grow up a lot and realize I'm not the hero that I thought I was at one time, and I also don't drink nearly to the degree that I used to. Just trying to live a better life and more productive and everything. And so, not a great story to feel proud of, but it was definitely scary and something that I will never forget. And that's it. Thank you.
Yeah, man, that is one of the more intense stories that we've had.
It's, it also, like, once I started looking into it, like I was saying before the call, like, it seems like, which we have no idea living in the United States, this seems to be a big problem that they just don't, the police up there, apparently, or what some people say is they just don't give a shit about, like, what happens to Native American people up there.
Hmm.
So, I don't know. But I, yeah. On top of all that aspect, too, it'd just be scary as hell to wake up in a truck with potentially being driven by two people that you've never seen before. And I actually had a similar where I passed out in somebody else's car mm-hmm. once. But luckily, the car didn't take off. My friend, she found me before the car took off.
Yeah, I mean, him being drunk is a whole nother aspect to the story, because I'm like, there's one piece of information that he could have got that maybe would have helped, which would have been the license plate if he could have remembered that. Because I'm assuming he didn't have his phone on him, to get a...
Yeah, apparently not, or didn't have service or something.
Yeah, but I mean, I can't Monday morning quarterback him, because he's, wasted and stuff. So in that, you're trying to identify that'd be only one piece of information that you'd try and get. But yeah, man, what a spot to wake up in, from a heavy situation to now you're in the middle of a novel.
Yep. And it sounds like, I guess, it would be pretty, I guess he kind of freaked out upon realizing there were people in the shipping container or storage shed or whatever it was.
Yeah, so he was totally freaking out because, if you're inside a house and the lights are on, it's very hard to see outside the windows.
Yeah.
Like, if the yard has, like, motion-activated floodlights or something, that's different. But if you've ever been in a house and it's very light inside and very dark outside, you just see your own reflection, basically, in the window. So he's freaking out in his head. Like, he is battling his own storyline, trying to get out of that truck, where those guys were, if they're sipping on some rye, they're probably having their own, they don't care.
Yeah, probably not on red alert.
No.
Them, yeah. And what, so, bigger picture, because I know this, how bad do you think realistically the trafficking thing is
mm-hmm.
of women being kidnapped and trafficked? Because I was trying to, especially compared to our next story,
mm-hmm.
which is completely different from this one, but it made me sort of think of the extremes of female experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, it would be bizarre to think if you, like, your entire life, you were basically being preyed upon by people. Like, as guys, we don't get that. Like, I mean, I've never, maybe when I was a little kid, I'd get nervous, like, the adults would teach me, don't talk to strangers or don't take off with anybody you don't know kind of thing.
Yeah.
But as a guy, you quickly kind of outgrow that.
Yeah.
You get where you feel like you can handle yourself and not, but like that would be bizarre if you were constantly in a state from when you were a kid through even into your adulthood that there might be people that could kidnap you at any moment.
Well, from the information that I hear through the stories or through the news or through different lines of information like that, is that, to get across the border, you've got to make deals. And those deals sometimes last for years, if not generations. Like, once you get over here, you got a certain color wristband that says how much you owe. And you are then shuttled through the system to...
Oh, like people coming up from Mexico? Or...
Anyway, it doesn't really... Mexico's just one place. Like, but, you come up through the system, then you're placed in a house that you now need to work off this debt in order to do that. And it's of course, it's going to be a totally disadvantageous rate where, you're paying off supposedly pennies on the dollar, with hours and days and weeks of your effort. Then that comes into the drugs, you get hooked. Now you're paying for those. And it's just a horrible system where they got you to the point where you police yourself and you're captive, but only through the training and through the system that you've been implemented into. So as far as how much of it I know of. I haven't been to, you know, I haven't come across any trailers with people in them.
Yeah,
self.
Yeah.
So I only have the what to go on is what I've, you know, taken.
Yeah, some of that stuff, it's hard to know how much is sensationalized for political purposes or even just selling, getting clicks or whatnot, you know? So it's like, but it definitely happened.
Yeah, I mean,
definitely real.
You know, some of it is, you know, the Special Crimes Unit. What's that show?
Yeah.
NCSI.
Oh, yeah. You know, they,
oh, I hear
yeah.
There's a lot of those stories that are taken from real court cases, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, but that's, I don't know if that's where I get my ideas from. So, I mean, they're out there.
Yeah.
And I'm not, you know, dismissing any of it. There's obviously help groups and all that set up and stuff. So I'm not trying to say that none of that exists. I don't have any personal experience.
Yeah. Well, now we'll go on to a story that, you know, difficult story about women that were truly having bad things happen to them. Now we'll go to the other end of the spectrum for a guy with a different female story. So
cool. All right.
What's up, guys? My name's Douglas from San Antonio, Texas, and I just wanted to call in, give you guys a real quick story. I'd heard that guy on your previous show that was talking about the problem with his AI girlfriend, and just wanted to kind of remind everybody that having a real girlfriend might not be much better, and I can laugh about it now, but it actually kind of devastated me several years back when I thought I'd found the love of my life. We were both in our late 20s. She was beautiful, smart, gorgeous, kind of girl next door, sexy, sweet, tight, that every guy loved, had a crush on, and even my parents loved her, and she had a great job, blah, 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 blah. She was my best friend and inspired me to be the best type of guy I can to be her husband as well as a father to our kids. She was like, not only had a great job, but she was a part-time yoga instructor. So always was in shape and talked about spirituality and karma and being good to other people. Sort of a perfect woman, you would think. The only minor complaint that I ever had with her is how much time she spent on her phone. She have like every phone app you can imagine, everything from Facebook to Insta to Discord to Snapchat to Telegram, even the ones I didn't, you know, even know about or care to find out about. She had everything and anything, and she was constantly on the phone. But you know how that goes if you're anybody in your 20s or 30s trying to get a girl to not be on her phone is basically the conversation quickly devolves into that you're being controlling or insecure or abusive or something, and why don't you trust her? So since everything else was perfect with her, I literally did not want to rock the boat or cause any issues or risk losing her. So basically, even though it bugged me how much she was on the phone, I didn't. Beside for one argument we had, I never brought it up again. And so, long story short, the business that she had was supposed to be that she was like a social media and Instagram model coordinator, meaning that she was trying to get an agency up off the ground that coordinated photo shoots for Instagram, social media models, stuff like that, which of course also justified why she was on those apps so much. And she always had plenty of money. I didn't even realize at the time actually how much money she had, but it wasn't like she was looking for me for money. So it sounded like everything with her business was legit and going well. And that caused her to probably twice a month, I would say, two weekends out of month, she would travel to different locations to coordinate these shoots and photo shoots. And so anyway, eventually one of her girlfriends who is drunk at a party they were having for our engagement spills the beans that, at least partially, she tells me what's going on. That my girlfriend, my fiance, is actually basically a high-priced call girl. She doesn't have that social media modeling agency that she claims to. What she is doing those 2 weekends a month she leaves is she's flying all around the world, from Paris to Vegas to Dubai, especially the Middle East, a lot, to go and sleep with really rich men for a lot of money. And again, I've recovered a lot from this. At the time, it was absolutely devastating, and especially what she put me through, because we were together for another 6 months after that with her denying all of it. And I only found out the truth by talking about Bab and getting his friend who used to work in law enforcement and is a private investigator now to install an app on her, a virus on her phone that pulled the messages off of those apps, where unfortunately it was all true. She was flying to Dubai, Vegas, various places, and making sometimes multiple tens of thousands of dollars in a single weekend for sleeping with one guy or multiple guys. And obviously, I was completely devastated, crushed by the whole thing. But the two things that shocked me the most from it all was, one, that still to this day, she denies it. And she even made up stories about me being abusive to her. And the second thing is, probably half of the people we know side with her and basically say that what she was doing wasn't that bad, and that I am abusive and controlling, which blows me away. Both of those, that there's like no... there's no resolution. There's no eventual facts that we're all agreeing on. And there's no apology from her or admitting that she did anything wrong. And so that's my story, just to tell that guy that I have an AI girlfriend. It doesn't get any better sometimes with real women. I will say that I think I'm not a very trustworthy good girl now that I'm in a solid relationship with. But what most people don't understand is, when something like that happens to you, once the trust is broken, now I'm screwed up as far as trusting people. When, like, when my current girlfriend, whenever I see her get on the phone and is messaging people that I don't know, it's like I've got almost a PTSD reaction to it, of fear and just not having the trust for her because of what the other girl did. And not to get too philosophical, but in a big picture way, I think that's what's kind of ruining society, is everybody seems to be quicker and quicker on breaking other people's trust, and it causes a ripple effect throughout society. Because once you have somebody betray you, then it is very hard for you to give the trust needed to make this, the relationship, whether it's friendship, romantic, whatever, work. It's very hard to make that a good relationship going forward if your trust has been ruined by somebody. So anyway, I just thought I'd call in and share the story as well, to go with the guy from the AI girlfriend problems. Thanks.
So that's the spectrum. You got women that are actually being taken advantage of, and then that girl, probably the high price Dubai hooker, she probably thinks or claims she's getting taken advantage of all the time.
Clarify for me, was he married to her and had a kid, or
I think engaged? No, I think he just meant they were talking about planning on having kids.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. Because I was gonna, I'm like, you know, even if you don't know if they're rich, there will be signs, you know,
yeah,
that she's getting some money from somewhere. Like,
well, but that's the thing with, like, it sort of makes sense if, and this actually, I had heard of a similar story to this. and did research to find it from a few years ago. Well, first of all, I went on Reddit, because I always go on Reddit to check how much stuff like this is happening or people.
Yeah.
And there's tons of people that are finding out their girlfriends are not only models of, OnlyFans.
The Dubai thing, and I might be using the wrong terminology, but it's really, I think they're called portalette girls or something.
Portalette. Like
right.
The toilet?
Yes.
Yes.
Porta potty girl.
Porta, huh.
Some kind of version of that where these super ultra mega wealthy, you know, guys.
Yeah.
Call over for, you know, attractive American women to go over there and they do all sorts of the dirtiest stuff to them, but they pay for it.
Yeah.
They pay for that privilege. And I might be using the wrong catchphrase there's definitely I forget what it's called, but there's a version of that.
Well, and I'll show you this. Unfortunately, people obviously listening can't see it, but just so you can see her, this is kind of a famous one that happened a couple of years ago. The Secret Life of Miss USA, Regina Turner, and how she was a high price prostitute. And her husband, who was a successful neurosurgeon, found out about it. That she was one of those chicks going over to Dubai and basically, doing stuff for rich guys in Dubai. And she would basically, and she was Miss USA.
Mm.
And would go over there claiming she was on a business trip. And then there's that, and then even, like, the number of people on Reddit that would finding out that their girlfriend has, like, an OnlyFans.
Yeah.
Or is doing some sort of version of porn is just through the roof.
And the funny thing is that all of this debauchery and all of this untrust and all of this behind-the-back stuff is all done for fictitious money.
Yeah.
Like, fictitious.
Yep. Well, yeah.
Money.
Well, and yeah, it is bad because I've thought a lot about that. I mean, it's just so, like, people completely sell out.
Yeah.
Their, whether you want to talk about souls or just they sell out their future happiness for what they really want for the superficial amassment of money, which, yeah, in the best of ways of thinking about it, it's just limited how much happiness that is going to get you. But then, yeah.
Seashells.
Yeah.
They're doing this for a pile of seashells.
Well, it's like all
essence, in essence.
The thing that I always think about money is it's just so relative.
It is.
It's so people think of it in absolute terms and they get so fixated on it. But it's also like you would be anyone in America right now.
Mm-hmm.
If you went back 50, 100 years, you would be considered like wealthy as shit because you live in an air conditioned house with plumbing, with entertainment nonstop.
That's part of the trap, Jim, is the conveniences.
Yeah.
You know, that is a trap.
That's the thing that always fascinates me about human nature is everybody thinks money is the answer, but there's literally, if you look through all of history and there's no amount that will ever satisfy.
It's like quicksand.
Yeah. It's just because, if you flash back 100 years, you would have more than anyone.
Mm-hmm.
Just the average person would have more than anyone. You would be living in more opulence, have more convenience, more entertainment, but you still want more.
It's not going to be easy answers to your problems are still going to be there and probably magnified at some point by money in the end. You might appear on Instagram to be happy. You might appear to go to Dubai and do fun things. And I don't know. I don't know what's happening on the inside of those skulls. Are they at peace? Are they happy? I don't think so.
Probably not.
Yeah.
Especially if they're like in a camel orgy or whatever goes on over there.
Yeah.
Which, we shouldn't Google.
Well, but maybe they're here to, you know, somebody's got to be the one to experience a camel orgy to bring it back to the source to know what a camel orgy's like. So, kudos to you for being that.
That's a tough card to draw.
So I'm not going to judge. I try not to judge because other people's ways are other people's paths, and somebody's got to do it.
Have you ever had, not to get too personal, have you ever had a chick that you were seriously involved with that cheated on you? Because I have.
Not that I know of. Not that I know of.
Yeah. It is, one thing you mentioned in that is it is bewildering. Also, the way society evolves to talk and believe certain things, and it's amazing how much society will make excuses for a woman cheating, and not for a man. But even if you're the one that gets cheated on, lots of times the conversation will be, well, why weren't you a better boyfriend or husband or whatever? Why did you drive her to cheat?
Well, yeah, there's lots of dynamics going on between men and women, between age. There's a breakdown of a lot of different things happening in society. Where if you take a story and flip it, it's going to be judged completely different from one angle versus another angle. And yeah, that's a whole other show we could do. But yeah, it seems like trustworthiness and just general overall self-worth is under attack.
Yep. And I think that is absolutely correlated to social media. The rise of, because both from, you got to think from, well, the self-esteem part is kind of obvious because people then see things they're comparing themselves to that might not even be real, but they're constantly reminded of things that make them think of their imperfections. But then from dating, both from male and female perspective, I think it's just somehow the advent of dating apps, social media apps, all of that makes it so easy or such a realistic option. Well, realistic might not be the right word. It seems like an option that you can always switch to somebody better.
Mm-hmm. And bars that have been placed for you to achieve, some of them are not achievable. Some of them real. You're fighting against filters now. You're fighting against AI. You're fighting against men who are women. You're fighting you're battling against this, and then you're putting your self-worth, your own self-worth on the table and judging it against all of these artificial constructs.
Yep. Yeah, and constantly, and the difficulty with a real lasting relationship is you got to go through different ups and downs and challenges to actually build that deeper and deeper trust in team thinking, partnership.
Yep.
And nowadays, it doesn't seem like anything in society is designed.
Everything's throwaway and immediate. Yeah. Microwave.
Yeah, because it's easier to find somebody else than to have that awkward conversation with the person.
Mm-hmm.
So even if that person that you think you're switching to doesn't even exist, or they're way less great than what you think they are through social media or apps, lots of people will make that decision rather than having a difficult conversation or trying to stick it out with another person.
That's true.
Yeah. Yeah. So yet another sign that technology is destroying us, Freddie.
Yeah. It's got to come full circle at some point.
Yep.
Just hold on. Hold on.
So we might actually have to cut it off early, I realize, and not have the fourth phone call, but make it up on the next episode because the equipment is getting low.
Uh-oh.
Yep, Freddie, we might be getting shut down here.
Technology is jamming you, Chip.
Yep, jamming me again. Mm. So I did want to try and encourage everybody to call in more stories and make sure to vote for at the first week of every month. You can vote on the prior month. And Rob, the guy that won it this time, he did it the right way, Freddie.
Yeah.
He spread the word and a bunch of people started voting for him,
awesome,
which is why I won. So it's the game can be rigged.
Oh, he got his
what
plan.
I would like to, yeah, I would like to encourage people. You can call in a mediocre story and still win.
Good.
Oh, so hopefully we'll keep on getting more stories in and we'll get Rob on the show here in the next couple of weeks. And somebody new is going to win $250 this month. So call in the story and please share the show to anyone that you think might be interested. And thanks a lot. We will talk to you next week.
Please keep in mind that your Best True Story podcast cannot attest to the veracity of any story contained within. Therefore, we strongly recommend you seek second opinions before leaving your job to hunt Bigfoot, leaving your spouse because they may be a secret lizard alien, ingesting large amounts of hallucinogenics to travel to other dimensions, robbing banks, summoning demons, or participating in large numbers of orgies. The Your Best True Story podcast takes no responsibility if you are bitten by a werewolf, audited by the IRS, or develop
X. You got a crazy ass true story to tell. It could be funny or thrilling or creepy as hell. And when you speak, surely none will make a sound. And the world's going breathless when your true story comes around. Oh, hear the crazy bullshit flying. Just one more, maybe true story before we're dying. Yet be warned, surely not all stories will be treated the same. So don't blame us if your tale about grandma's cookies is lame. The only way to ensure you could possibly win a buck is to make sure that story of yours don't suck. So instead of yawns, go ahead and tell us how that Bigfoot or werewolf drowned, and then hear the world go breathless when your true story comes around.